The next case is 97-1285, disciplinary counsel versus Jerry Craig. Mr. Henteman.
If it pleases the court, my name is Henry Henteman, and I and Mary Sabella represent the respondent in this matter. We are objecting to the recommended sanction of the Board of Commissioners grievances and discipline of the Supreme Court, which had recommended indefinite suspension for Mr. Craig for his involvement in Gemstone or in the disturbance situation. We are urging that this court to impose a sanction of a 2-year term suspension with credit for time served. This court, in recent decisions, has indicated that the factors that this court will consider with respect to the recommended sanction is the duty that was violated, the injury or the harm that was done to the individual that received the violation of the duty, the state of mind of the attorney involved, as well as any mitigating factors. There's no question here that Mr. Craig was found guilty and convicted of attempting or taking part in a conspiracy to attempt to impede the IRS collecting taxes from Mr. Sturman. Mr. Craig was found guilty of that charge. He served his time. He has accepted responsibility and has shown great remorse as a result. The nature of the case, I think, in order to understand where we're coming from, is that you need a little bit of the history as to what took place. And I'm going to try to, as briefly as possible, do that. In 1982, Mr. Craig was approached by a longtime friend of his, Mr. Reuben Sturman. Mr. Craig was a personal friend of Joe Sturman. They went to school together, et cetera. Mr. Sturman was about 13 or 14 years older than Mr. Craig. Mr. Sturman approached him to be the National Coordinating Counsel for the First Amendment litigation. As we all know, that Mr. Sturman was in the adult bookstore industry or the adult entertainment industry, and these stores were being shut down or being charged with violations of various ordinances around the country, and he was to coordinate that litigation as it took place under some uniformity, etc. He was never hired to be Mr. Sturman's personal counsel. He was to be the National Coordinating Counsel. However, in 1984, Mr. Sturman came up to Mr. Craig and asked for some advice with respect to setting up a trust fund for his children. And Mr. Craig stated that's not his practice. Mr. Craig's background has been in criminal law and personal injury work prior to working with Mr. Sturman, and had some First Amendment experience. But he told Mr. Sturman that he would get him a lawyer, and he referred Mr. Robert Garfield, who was a specialist in estate planning and so forth. Mr. Garfield was, what they were trying to do is to accumulate all of these stores that were in nominees' names and put them under the umbrella of a corporation. And Mr. Garfield started working on this in 1984, and I think until about 1987, trying to accumulate these properties and put them into this trust fund that Mr. Sturman said he was setting up for his son.
We have been provided the facts and the briefs, so we know that the client was committed to them, and, it's all steps.
Your Honor, I just would like to, what I'm getting to is that there came a point in time when Mr. Garfield wanted to get out from under this because he felt suspicious about some of the things, and I think there's evidence to the effect that he may have told Mr. Craig that. That was in 1987. Mr. Craig left the employment of Mr. Sturman on December 31, 1987. He pulled out. He was no longer involved with Mr. Sturman at that point in time. However, they kept calling him back. the point I was trying to make is that he did pull out, he tried to sever a relationship with Mr. Sturman in 1987, December.
But then, I mean, so if he got out, it was the argument somebody got out because he had reason to believe. What was his reason for getting out?
Well, his main reason for getting out was because he had a personal injury matter that was coming up for a trial that was a great matter.
That's not the reason you're arguing it.
No, I'm not arguing it.
You're arguing that he got out because when he thought there might be some shenanigans, your argument is when he knew that, he got out.
No, my argument is that at that point in time, he really wasn't sure of any shenanigans.
Well,
he thought
sure
there was a precedent.
I thought that's why you made the argument. You said, my point is, once he had some suspicion, he pulled out.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. Is that Mr. Garfield had suspicions and he got out.
Yeah.
But Mr. Craig also severed relationships with Mr. Sturman at that time. It may have been for other reasons.
Okay.
But the point is, he severed his relationship with Mr. Sturman. And from that time on...
He went back. I'm asking why should we consider that when he continued to go back?
Okay, I guess the point I would like to make is the fact that the underlying entity that was the entity that was going to be a tax shelter of some sort,
yes,
Gemstone, was being run by a Mr. Ginsburg. Mr. Craig had nothing to do with that. He did write a letter to a Panamanian lawyer to set up that corporation, and he never had any further involvement with Gemstone. And then, as I'm trying to point out, is that he then went back to his own private practice for all practical purposes. There came a time when Mr. Sturman was convicted of tax evasion for a prior conspiracy, and they called him in because they were going to put a lien on the property, on the Gemstone property. That lien was in place. The government did in fact put the lien on the property. And then Mr. Craig, I guess his other involvement was that he brought in some other lawyers, Scott and DeSantis, to see whether there was any method whereby they could remove that lien. They were brought in and they wanted to make sure that there was in fact a legitimate trust before they could get involved. And they found out that there was no legitimate trust, so they got out. And then Mr. Craig was at a meeting in August of 1988, where Mr. Ginsburg indicated to him that there may not be a trust. And then in 1991, he went to another meeting in Florida, and in the Florida meeting, Mr. Ginsburg gave a loan to Mr. Sturman for $270,000 without any paperwork. And that's when Mr. Craig realized that there was something going on, or realized for sure that he was involved with something. What I'm getting at is that he had no active involvement with Gemstone. The Gemstone Corporation, the lien remained in place. No lawsuit was ever filed to remove that lien. And I would also like to point out, with respect to the harm done to the victim, is that in this case, the government testified in the trial, Mr. Craig did it at the hearing, was the fact that the government has recovered, and up to the time of the trial, $10 million from Gemstone, and they are still continuing to collect from that entity. Probably the tax lien will be completely satisfied. The lawyer's state of mind is, I think if you look at the history that, and I didn't want to belabor this court with all of that, is that he has been a friend of Mr. Sturman's for many, many years. I think he was giving maybe an overzealous representation of Mr. Sturman, and he tried to do the best he could for him in the representation as a lawyer. The background, the friendship, and the loyalty that he felt for Mr. Sturman. I think there are two things here that also the court should be cognizant of. The Board of Grievances, the Board of Commissioners found that Mr. Craig's involvement was acts of omission, not commission. That he should have gotten out. He didn't do anything with respect to Gemstone, but he finally came to acknowledge that the fact something was going on here. He should have gotten away from it. And also, the court, Judge Dowd, in his record, shows that Mr. Craig's involvement was minimal with respect to Gemstone. He wrote the letter, but he had no further involvement. Mr. Ginsburg then took over the operation of Gemstone, and Mr. Craig was in his private practice.
Which of the, you argued for a different sanction than Mr. Ginsburg got.
Okay.
Can you address that?
Sure, I was going to come to that. Is that with Mr. Ginsburg, we have active commission on his part. He falsified documents, he prepared false affidavits. He prepared documents for the corporation that were not proper. And he also lied with respect to the interrogations with respect to the election. Mr. Craig did none of those things. He was involved, but as the board has found, it was an act of omission, not commission. And as Judge Dowd has said, that his involvement was minimal compared to what other people have had. We feel that he had served, he was given a 30-month sentence in jail. He served 20 months of that. He had an admirable record in the prison. He ran the law library, and he also taught three courses to the inmates there with respect to the law. The litigation factors are that Mr. Craig has had an impeccable record as a lawyer for the last 34 years. Mr. Craig is 60 years old, has been a member of this Bar Association ever since he came out of law school. He has always had timely payments of his registration. He filed on time. He had CLE credits, but always up to date. And I'm trying to distinguish now with the Feldman case, which the board refers to. Mr. Craig is an admirable lawyer in this community, and I would like to see him have the chance to go back into the practice before he is cool. The factors involved in this case really are such that he should have a term sentence for 2 years and be given credit for time served so that he can get back into the practice. And I believe there are numerous records and numerous letters in the record reflecting the competency of Mr. Craig and the people that are vouching for him. Thank you,
Mr. Hinteman. Mr. Craig, you've saved some time, yes, over 2 minutes. Mr. Craig.
Morning, Your Honor. My name is Cheryl Craig, and later. I would first of all like to respond to two of the issues that the respondent brought up that were addressed by the trial court and also by the Court of Appeals. The first was the acceptance of responsibility. The respondent in his brief at various times has quoted part of what the trial court said and part of what the Court of Appeals said. The remainder of it, however, is very important. Regarding this acceptance of responsibility, the Court of Appeals said, in granting a request for downward departure, the district court recognized that was a close call and acknowledged that he had not encountered a case quite like that one before. So the acceptance of responsibility was not at all clear. The Court of Appeals went on to say, the standard review here is whether the finding was clearly erroneous, while we recognize that other sentencing courts may have come to a different conclusion regarding this matter. Acceptance of responsibility is within the province of the district court, and we do not find clear error. And in fact, when the respondent went before the district court said that at that time the respondent had finally realized that he was not quote a victim. The respondent deals with one hand and takes away with another hand in terms of accepting responsibility. With regard to his minimal participation, the Court of Appeals also addressed that. And we have heard the word minimal used here. In reviewing that aspect of the sentencing, the Court of Appeals said with regard to his participation, a close question is presented as to Craig's personal use of sophisticated means. Although we might have reached a different conclusion in the district court, we must accept the findings of fact. So in both cases, in both aspects, the acceptance of responsibility and the respondent's minimal involvement was were very limited by the district court, and the court of appeals indicated both of them were very close call. And I should also like to point out that when we were talking about the minimal contact here, the minimal anticipation, this was simply with regard to whether or not the respondent should receive an additional upward adjustment in his sentence for personal use of sophisticated means. And that comment was limited solely to that issue. The comment about acceptance of responsibility was limited to whether or not the district court was correct in granting some downward departure. And again, the Court of Appeals said that was a very close call.
Mr. Craig, the board in making its recommendation says that his conduct, referring to Mr. Craig, his conduct primarily being that of omission rather than commission. Do you wish to speak to that? Was this, it appears to me from your brief that that you would dispute that. Is that
correct?
Tell me why.
In these criminal cases, the farther away we get from the actual trial record at the criminal trial, the more the facts tend to creep away. And that is the reason that at times we call the prosecutor and perhaps the judge to testify in the hearing. That's happened in this case. If you read the indictment, if you read the government's case that was put on, if you read the verdict, conviction, sentencing, and the affidavit given by the respondent this year in 1977, you'll realize that this was a very complicated conspiracy. Not only was this not a matter of acts of omission, but the respondent was actually managing. He was up here with Reuben Sturman. Mr. Ginsburg, Mr. Garfield, and everybody else was down here. The respondent was a manager in this conspiracy.
Okay, describe what you mean by a manager. Specifically, what
the respondent brought in Garfield, who ultimately got out because he realized it was a tax evasion. The respondent wrote to the Panama law firm, Alfaro, who was another co-conspirator who was indicted and was recently arrested. The respondent wrote and arranged to have the Panamanian Corporation set up, which was to be a holding company to take property owned by Sturman, which was then held by Sturman nominees. Those nominees were to transfer the property to this Panamanian corporation, which the respondent had set up in Panama. This corporation, according to the respondent's instructions, was then issued bearer shares to a Swiss alleged trust. And in that manner, Sturman hoped to divest himself of this property and thereby avoid liens and execution on the property. This was all set up and controlled by the respondent. The respondent made the contact to Panama. He provided the instructions.
Who testified to all that?
Pardon?
Who testified to all that?
That's cited quite clearly in the Court of Appeals opinion, Your Honor.
Don't you know?
Pardon me?
Don't you
Who
know?
Testified to that at the criminal trial?
Yeah.
Ginsburg. Mr. Ginsburg was also recruited by the respondent. This court has heard the case of Ginsburg, and that is cited in our brief.
Was he the only one who testified to that?
Your Honor, Mr. Alfredo died before he could be brought to trial. This Mr. Colley, who was one of the other co-conspirators, was just recently apprehended on a fugitive warrant. You only have left Mr. Ginsburg, the respondent, Mr. Garfield. Mr. Garfield testified as to being brought in by the respondent. He testified to the tax evasion problem. Two attorneys provided testimony. Two attorneys were later brought in.
Okay, is your answer yes?
Pardon?
Is your answer yes?
Did people testify to
No. it? No. Was Mr. Ginsburg the only one that testified to that? Was your answer yes?
To which aspect?
All these things you testified to.
So, Your Honor, this is a conspiracy, and there are bits and pieces of the story that you have to put together.
Who was
no single person.
Who was the main witness against him?
I don't know if I call him the main witness against him, but probably the most damaging witness against him was Mr. Ginsburg.
Okay.
Mr. Ginsburg was who he recruited and brought in to do the actual execution of the
Mr. Ginsburg was the main witness against him.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. I think that's correct. However, there was testimony given by a number of people involved. There was testimony given by Mr. Garfield.
Mr. Craig?
Yes, correct. Mr. Garfield testified that he actually told Mr. Craig why he was resigning. That was that there was a tax evasion plan in process.
Was there testimony to the extent that Mr. Ginsburg was?
Pardon?
Was there testimony to the extent that Mr. Ginsburg's testimony was?
Dr. Lee, Mr. Ginsburg's testimony was probably the most extensive. And there's a reason for that, Dr. Lee. Mr. Ginsburg was the only one that they were ever actually able to keep in the conspiracy. Mr. Garfield quit when he realized that it was a vehicle for tax evasion. Attorneys Scott and Sands were later retained to try to defeat the levies. One of them went to Switzerland and talked to the Swiss national where the trust allegedly was and realized that there was no trust there. And testimony was given on that by that attorney at the trial. Those two attorneys quit. Ginsburg was the only one who stayed in the conspiracy.
Did Mr. Craig quit?
No, he didn't. His testimony was that he left at the end of 1987 because he had a personal injury case going. But if you take a look at the evidence presented at the trial, and you don't even have to go that far. If you take a look at the evidence in the respondent's affidavit, which was executed in 1997 this year, to the government for which he received a reduction in his reiterated sentence, you'll find in there that he attended a meeting in 1991 where they quite clearly discussed the conspiracy and where he acknowledges that he knew about the conspiracy. Now, when I cross-examined the respondent at hearing, he initially said that he didn't even know there was a criminal conspiracy going on until 1991. Questioning started at 121 of the transcript. Ultimately, the respondent admitted that he knew in 1988 that there was something going on. No, the respondent did not leave. He left physically, but he did not leave the conspiracy. He was still very active in 1991 and beyond. And that's in his affidavit. So to answer your question, Justice Moyer, yes, we do believe that he was a participant. He actually did receive an upward adjustment in his sentence by the district court under the federal sentencing guidelines for being a manager. Along these lines, I think it's important to take a look at some of the findings by the Court of Appeals. And Justice Sweeney, the Court of Appeals got the entire trial record before it, all of the evidence, and just fully briefed. In the criminal action said, Craig was the person who knew most of the details about Gemstone. Craig, this was testimony from Mr. Ginsburg in answer to your question. Craig gave me all the information, all the files, and he had been involved in many of the transactions that had come to me in the files. He was Ruben Sturm's attorney and close friend. He could get things done. He could tell me who to deal with, and just provide me with information to help me. Craig had given me outlines of which properties were to be purchased by Gemstone, which was the Panamanian Corporation. How they were to be purchased and where the money was to come from. The court goes on to say that in 1989, about the time the levy was assessed, Ginsburg sent a memo to Craig and others outlining how he planned to transfer different properties into Gemstone's name. After the tax levy was assessed, evidence demonstrates that Craig participated in keeping the IRS from discovering who actually owned Gemstone. Ginsburg again testified that by March of 1989, Craig knew that Gemstone was actually owned by Sturman and was not in trust. Craig and Ginsburg then lied to the lawyers that they had hired to file a wrongful levy action against the United States on Sturman's behalf. Other testimony showed that Craig was involved in concealing assets and stores that Sturman sold. Craig was involved in drafting sales contracts to make it look like Spicali, who was a Swiss national, was the seller. The checks were made out to Spicali and sent to Craig, who sent them to Spicali. Craig then sent copies of those checks to Sturman so that Sturman could keep track of these things.
Counsel, was there anything in the record indicating how the respondent was compensated for these so-called services?
Your Honor, at various times, there was testimony that during some of these periods that the respondent was not compensated. That was not, to the best of my knowledge, something that was fully explored at the trial. But you have a long-standing relationship between Sturman and Craig, whether or not there's stuff in the paper trail on compensation.
I just wondered that. It seemed to me that'd be another.
I know that at some point
it would be another indicia of his.
Probably that's
his mindset.
He's
highly compensated for this.
Understand. The best indication, I think, Your Honor, is the affidavit that the respondent executed this year. And that outlines his participation in the Larry Allen conspiracy going up to and including the meeting in 1991. And that affidavit actually says that he knew there was a conspiracy going on. The respondent also needed Aaron to cross-examination at the hearing.
I'm still confused by. I'm confused. I'm just wondering why the board would say his conduct primarily being that of omission rather than commission. We don't have the board here, obviously, to explain it. But do you have any idea why the board would have said that? I mean, you quoted excerpts from the circuit court's opinion, in which one place they say his involvement. Personal involvement with them was minimal, meaning the Panamanian law firm and so forth, but then they say the evidence showed that Craig knew that Sturman owed taxes and conspired to deprive the government of the information needed to ascertain and collect and so forth. Because it does make a difference to me whether these were acts of omission or commission. Maybe they're mixed, I guess, but that seems like.
Your Honor, first of all, there was this. When I first started out, I made a point to read the surrounding language for the quotes of the respondents, and it suggests minimal. I don't think the board perhaps read those comments in the context of the Court of Appeals opinion. The respondent was a very persuasive witness. The other factor I think probably which might have entered into it was the government witness who appeared and testified as a prosecution witness did provide information. However, at that time, the respondent was involved in cooperating with the government as the government attempted to prosecute Sakali, which is for the rest of this year. So the government's testimony, and they wanted to continue this far here for that very reason, the government's testimony was not as strong as it could have been because, quite frankly, the respondent was acting as a government witness at that time. I don't think that the board, perhaps, I hesitate to say it, I don't think the board perhaps was aware of the entire circumstances of the indictment itself. If you read the indictment, unlike many indictments, is a very clear outline of exactly what happened.
Thank you, Mr. Craig. Mr. Henneman, you've saved a little over 3 minutes of your time.
Mr. Craig, Harold Craig.
Not related, not even spelled the same, right?
Tried to cast burdens upon Mr. Craig's accepting responsibility. I would like to read from the court record, from the health court record, where they state, the U.S. Court of Appeals Sixth Circuit held that the district court was in the best position to gauge Mr. Craig's state of mind and to assess his credibility, and they deferred to Judge Dowd, whose reputation I think everybody here appreciates. With respect to acts of omission versus commission, I believe that conclusion was reached by the board by virtue of the relator's witness, Mr. Woolley, was the prosecutor in this case. And Mr. Woolley testified that at the direction of Sturman, Craig wrote the letter to Alfaro in Panama to set up a corporation, and that was the extent of his involvement, that letter to Alfaro, and then Alfaro did the rest of that. He also testified, this is now the state's witness, or the relator's witness, he says Ginsburg had full authority to manage the properties of Gemstone. It was Ginsburg who took over the management of Gemstone and conduct the business of Gemstone. He also testified that Ginsburg, as manager of Gemstone, prepared false documents, prepared false affidavits, backdated official documents. This is where the acts of commission come into play. Mr. Ginsburg ran the day-to-day management of Gemstone. That was also testimony from the prosecutor. I would also like to mention that they used the term trying to arrive at a, I guess, a sentencing as to whether it's a manager or organizer or what. When, I think if you read that, you're going to realize that they are talking about what did Mr. Craig do. And they talk about Mr. Craig brought in these lawyers to try to help in this setup. I would like to point out to this court that the lawyers that Mr. Craig recommended were highly ethical and top-notch lawyers. They were not people that he was trying to influence to get and do things that he wanted to have done or Sturman wanted to have done. He thought, honestly, that there was maybe a way that this was, in fact, a legitimate trust. When it was found out that they didn't, that they couldn't substantiate that, these lawyers got out. And Mr. Craig never tried to coerce them into doing anything, so he did bring in some top-notch lawyers. There's no question about that. I would like to also just...
Lord, I'm not at 100% with the whole idea that Mr. Craig is the close... I mean, it's argued by the relator that Mr. Craig is the close friend. In fact, some of the brief seems to give some defense to Mr. Craig because these BPP and Sturman were close friends. So if he's the close friend and these other people figure out that there's no trust in Switzerland, one would think that Mr. Craig surely knew that. He's the confidant.
And I think he does admit that in 1988 at a meeting with Ginsburg. There, like, ever since he severed relationship, that is in December of 87, there were three meetings. When you read the record, it sounds like they're doing day-to-day business over a four-year period from 87 until the indictment, I believe, was in 95. I stand corrected on that. But we're talking about an eight-year period. He had three meetings he attended. And at those meetings, they brought him along as he testified in his record as a historian, that because he had some background how this was all set up. And he was told, there's no question about that, and I believe even the witness for the relator, the prosecutor, says that Mr. Ginsburg did initially start to set this up as a trust for his children. I would also like to point out that in the record, and I don't have it here, but it's in the record that Mr. Woolley, the prosecutor, testified with respect to the relationship of Mr. Craig and Mr. Sturman. There was loyalty, it was a client relationship, and also, and on one of the pages there, and I marked it in front of me, but Mr. Woolley says that Mr. Sturman is the type of person that could have brought in Mr. Craig. Mr. Craig could have been taken in by Mr. Sturman. And I think the close relationship, and he just felt loyal to Mr. Sturman as a result of got involved in some old issues.
Thank you, Mr. Henderman. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.